Dameshek football program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek football program. As always, it's available on iTunes and at NFL.com/Sheck. S-H-E-K, Sheck. I feel we have a fine podcast in store for you today. On the heels of what was a Gangbusters podcast earlier in this week, we were joined here in Studio 66 by the delightful and ruggedly handsome Brady Quinn. In fact, Black Tie fell very much in love with him. He really found him to be more handsome than Tom Brady or Cam Newton. That's strong stuff. I mean, it's not just saying
Cam Newton, he's
a nice-looking man. No, he's better than my number one, which is Brady.
Oh, Brady. See, Newton's my number one because of those chompers. You know, wow. I'm a sucker for good chompers, and that guy's got a heck of a smile.
He really does. Oh, he's, I mean, yes, I mean,
let's be honest.
He cuts a striking figure when he walks in the room. 6'5", he's a mountain of a man.
It was all about Brady Quinn's body language. He just seems like a cool dude. You know what I mean? Like, he first came into the podcast studio almost seeming like he didn't want to do it. Ended up spending 25 minutes with us telling our stories, and we left the world's longest voicemail on AJ Hawk's phone.
Yeah, we kibitzed with Brady Quinn is, of course, his sister is married to AJ Hawk, one of our favorites here on the show, so we left him a message. He didn't pick up the phone, but he did text me afterwards to say he was sufficiently annoyed by the 27-minute-long message we left. also, Swagga, Ike Taylor, he pulled no punches as usual. He joined us and told us what he thought the Steelers needed to do, how his workouts with Johnny Football went, and what he thinks about Johnny Football now that he's seen him up close and personal, plus the possibility of Hard Knocks and his thoughts on Donald Sterling, that whole mess. So go ahead and give that one a look again on iTunes or at NFL.com/Sheck. But all right, that's in the rearview mirror. Let's look ahead to next week. I'm excited. NFL draft.
Don't worry about yesterday. It's already done.
Is nearly here.
Don't worry about tomorrow. It hasn't happened yet.
So many tremendous impressions out of the man whose voice you're hearing. He's the host.
It's all about today.
Of the College Football 24/7 podcast, Mock Draft Weekly.
God told me that. God's a good friend of mine. He's the one that told me to say that before every show.
Oh, yeah.
He's God.
I love the impressions out of this character. I listen to him on 570 here in Los Angeles, the finest sports radio program going in these parts and in all these United States, as a matter of fact. They did Gangbusters work on Petros and Money, PMS. Look it up on iHeartRadio. And dig what they got going on the Sterling stuff. We'll talk about that, like I say. But here in these parts at the NFL Media, Mock Draft Weekly Talent Mock Draft is coming up next week. And the ongoing draft coverage, it is nearly here, everybody. At the time of this recording, we're 1 week away, in fact, from the big pick of the Houston Texans. Hey, guess what, Texans? Guess what, everybody? The GM, Rick Smith, says he knows who he wants. Yeah, I guess you should. You're the general manager of the team. I would think you've ruminated on this subject a little bit since the season ended. All right, so
was that a headline, by the way? Did that make headline? It did.
The headline was, GM I know Rick who Smith. I want.
Well, he's got a choice of everybody, so there are no hiccups.
Good. This is great news. You're, definitely the confidence is well placed then in the Texans fan base. All right, let's say hello to him now. The man I was just yapping here about. Like I say, from
Hello.
PMS.
Hello.
And from fantasy football and all that jazz. It's Matt Money Smith. What's the poop, fella?
It's good to be here. Good to be here,
what
Sheck.
A pleasure.
I would love to do the podcast more. You know that. But, of course, the radio show beckons today, a day off, because it's a Dodger doubleheader day because that idiot, Carl Poled, decided to build a freaking baseball stadium without a roof in Minnesota.
You know what? Maybe that was a bad move, but it should inspire or humiliate the Vikings for not doing the same. How can they in Minnesota? Listen, I hate to do it for the millionth time here, million and first time, but how can you, as the Minnesota Vikings, and for that matter, the Detroit Lions, the NFC North, the rugged and brutal, NFC North, so many great. How much better would Thanksgiving Day be if you started it by watching the Lions play outdoors, not in a dome? That's no way to go. And by the way, a lot of teams are from the South. It would be a home field advantage for the Vikings and the Lions to have these Southern teams have to go up there. But no, they like to stay nice and climate
fast track, you know, football. Like right track man over there. Right, Mr. 110-meter hurdles.
Here he is, the man. We love him when he pays us a visit in Studio 66. He's done so multiple times here as we lead up to the 2014 draft and just wrapped up a gangbuster series on NFL.com. Draft do-overs. He takes a year in the draft and gives those teams the guys they should have taken. Now, with the benefit of hindsight, here he is, everybody. Bucky Brooks, what's the poop with you?
What up, Shaq? How you doing? I can't put my goggles up.
Yep, your goggles for hindsight.
My hindsight goggles. That's when I have these on, that means I get them perfect.
You know, it's funny, Sheck, having access to the comment section of those videos that I do with Bucky. He does it. I'm the mechanic, I guess, there. But people surprisingly supportive of history. They really appreciate
this. This would have been better.
Yeah, this is great.
You know what? I'm glad money brought this up. That never registered for me. Shame on you. What a hero you are.
That's right. I have the magic wand. I think it was really funny about the duo. People get so upset.
They get more upset about Bucky's do-over than their team making the bad pick.
Man,
they really do.
The Russell Wilson over RG3, it almost blew my phone up. The Twitter, it almost blew up. People were so mad.
But the stuff I mean, again, though, you know, shame on you. Just jumping in there and being like, you know, for my money, I think the Raiders made a mistake with Jamarcus Russell.
He's so mad.
What right have you, sir? What right have you?
We needed a guard. We wouldn't trade up to get that. Okay, who cares?
Right. We wouldn't have traded up to get Russell Wilson. Okay, you understand it's a fictional conversation. So while the Rams aren't there and the Redskins still are.
Fellas, who do you think you're talking to? You guys were nice enough to participate in the other thing that wrapped up at NFL.com and is still up there for your perusal is the all-time draft of 2014. It's the draft order of 2014. Houston Texans 1, Seattle Seahawks, of course, 32, and the actual team needs here in 2014. Except instead of it being the currently available pool of college players, it's all football players from all of time, except for the current players, because, of course, that would create a ripple in the space-time continuum.
Ashton Kutcher butterfly effect style.
Yeah, you can't if you take you take Peyton Manning off the Broncos, then what do they do? So you can't draft the current guys. But you could take John Elway, take Jim Brown, and so on. You guys did that. I don't know if you looked in the comments section of those. These videos, I found them delightful, if for no other reason than to see the college highlights. No, the college highlights.
Oh, they're great.
Although you're seeing Barry Sanders in his Oklahoma State getup and Mike Ditka playing for Pitt, both sides of the ball making a sack and so on. LT with UNC, as a matter of fact. Some of those highlights I'd never seen in my life. Pretty cool seeing him in the Carolina Blue.
That's right.
Safety in the Wake Forest QB.
They played Pitt when he was at Carolina. They played in those.
You know,
we actually dominated Pitt in those years.
I don't know about.
I think we spanked them around.
All right, settle down, Bucky, please.
Dan Marino.
Calvin Bryant, I remember coming
KB,
into Three
right.
River Stadium. They abandoned Pitt Stadium.
This has always bothered
joint.
Me, by the way. This has always bothered me. I know you're a Pittsburgh guy.
Yeah.
And I know IU sucks at football.
Indiana University.
But you don't get to be a Pitt Panther fan.
Yeah. No, you don't.
No, you don't.
You're a Hoosier.
You do not. You are a Hoosier. They have a football team. That is your alma mater.
Yes.
You do not get to be a Pitt Panther fan.
Wait a second. Wait a second. I'll not be attacked here in Studio 66 in this manner. Your pal, the sports guy, Bill Simmons, has attempted to charge me with the same crime.
Yes, we're good. He's a smart man.
Polygamy. Sports polygamy.
Doesn't
fan
polygamy.
Who am I talking to right now?
Why didn't you go to Pitt?
Hey, Mr. Chicago, how are your Blackhawks doing? Oh, no, I don't. You abandoned them.
I wrote a letter of divorce.
You
telling
tweet
Bill
out,
Wirtz
go
he could sell the team or die.
Go Kings, go.
And then I'd return.
Go Kings, go.
Yeah, and I
the
know.
South, the pride of the South that's, side is writing a, tweets, go Kings, go.
That's a pro team,
I give you two words. Alexei Shamnoff. I was an impressionable young man. And when you got JR, arguably one of the greatest representatives of that fine chief on his chest, and they trade him for Alexei Zhamnov, what was I supposed to do?
I hear you.
I sat down at that typewriter. It wasn't even a word processor. I do believe it was a typewriter. And I typed out a letter to old Bill Wirtz, told him I'd never cheer for the team again unless he died. And, well,
boy,
he did die.
I don't mean this in a negative way, but that is that is really nerdy. See, this is you know, what did you do in your formative years? You know, when teenage guys were chasing girls around, I'm typing letters to teams and
to Bill Wirtz. Maybe this will get Roenick back. If I type this out and I send it today, they might be able to nullify the trade. I got to get this to Wirtz right away.
Wow! Yeah. Right. Can I tell you one good news about how? Well, listen, fingers crossed. The Pittsburgh Penguins, my team, have advanced to the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. As it happens, I jump on a plane on Sunday to travel out to Manhattan.
Oh, the Rangers!
Game 3 Monday night. Dave Damashek fully intends to be
that?
Inside MSG to watch Crosby and Gino Malkin send the blue and red clad fans home. Sad.
You know, I think your partner here on the podcast, I think he does have a deep resentment toward my fandom of the Kings. I think it really bothers him. And I wish he were here to defend himself.
Because, I wish he were too, but you know.
But I think he does.
He has decided as of about 8 months ago. He's a Bears fan. No, yeah. Rank now considers himself, I mean, it's less
like
than
a family
year.
Thing or something, right?
Yeah, but he's embraced the Bears. You're a Chicago guy. Yeah. You guys.
I'm fine with that. You can root for the Bears. Good on you. That's
fine. Is it bad that I'm envious of both of you guys because you guys have pro teams that you can just ride or die with. For me, I don't have an NFL team that I can adopt like that. There's not a team that I can say, like, this is my squad. When you play for five different teams over, like, a five-year period, it's hard to fall in love with. And I can't go for maybe a team that I pulled in my childhood. So my son is a Cowboys fan, like, and I'm like, why? But he doesn't have a natural link. And so I don't have a team that I can jump on Sundays and be either upset or elated or whatever about. I missed that part of it in the league.
Do you imagine if LA gets a team, would you try? I mean, here's the problem with that, though, is that intellectually you want that to be the case. You would say, well, that's my team now. But you can't the heart wants what it wants. Your brain can't force you to actually care as much as you would like to.
Yeah, because I wish I could be fanatical about a squad, and I don't. So when I try to look back at my old teams, I'm like, well, I spent the most time in Green Bay. But it doesn't really turn the crank.
Panthers is the team, right?
I work for him, but I never played for him.
The Big Cat, you love him, right? Nice guy.
I mean, yeah, Big Cat is nice. Nice man.
Okay,
really nice.
See what I mean? So there you go. There's your answer.
Listen, they haven't won anything. That's one standard.
We went to the Super Bowl when I was working there, and we lost to the Patriots when Tom Brady had the last drive and Vinatieri kicked.
This seems like a slam dunk.
Yeah, but by the way, that was not the biggest part of that Super Bowl. Okay, that Super Bowl.
Janet Jackson.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Overshadowed forever because of the booby.
So far away. So far we can see.
But listen, I don't know. But a couple of standards. If you're in the market for a new team,
I need a team.
One thing is you can't latch on because it's phony to jump on board with a team that already has a nice legacy. So I resent anybody. Sort of like what Money's saying. You can't announce to me that you're a Steelers fan. Mm-hmm. Too late. You know,
it's too late.
The ship is out now. You know, if you're born into it, then of course that's a requirement. But you can't decide
unless you're a child. A child can do that.
I grew up with
a bunch of Steeler fans in Chicago because the Bears sucked and the Steelers were great. So
that was the phenomenon of the 70s.
Exactly. Right. These kids that are my age were just Steeler fans. That's what they're into.
So that means the Cowboys, the Redskins, the Steelers, the Packers, would they be out too?
I think you'd be okay with DC. You could go in that direction. You can't.
But I thought that's a traditional team that has a story tradition. You said the legacy.
I guess they've won.
I mean, they won three.
In this political climate, I'm just saying.
the Washington franchise. How about that? We call it the Washington.
I would.
The
I would
Washington
steer
franchise.
Maybe just go with the Giants, a fictional mascot. You know, maybe just to cover yourself here.
I know it's sad because you, as a father, now the thing that you could connect with your boy on. Listen, me and my old man. That's what we connect on is our Pittsburgh team. That same thing for you, but you can't go Dallas.
I can't. So right now, I have to pass it on. Like collegially. So you have adopted the Pittsburgh Panthers, even though you
makes were sense of that.
Adopted. Let me just these slings and arrows. May I say something quickly in my defense? I'm born and raised on the banks of the Three Rivers. One, two. My father was the team physician for Pitt. I used to go every summer.
Why didn't you go undergrad to Pitt?
Exactly. Listen to me.
Why did you forsake your father's place of employ?
I had dreams of walking on for Coach Knight.
That's the biggest thing. If you were that big of a Pitt fan.
Rank.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Adam Rank here. If you were that big of a Pitt fan, why didn't you just go to Pitt?
Because I wanted to have my cake and eat it, too. I could always come back to the city of Pittsburgh, and then I traveled
away from it. A place of employ for your father.
Mm. I don't care for
that. The home of so many childhood memories, and you go to Bloomington?
Oh, so many.
Bloomington
so
in Indiana.
So many gay times in Pitt Stadium and old Fitzgerald Fieldhouse in the early days of the Big East, watching an overmatched Pitt team handle Patrick Ewing's Hoyas and Chris Mullins' St. Johnny's. Oh, those were heady days. But, yeah, I moved on to the Big Ten, and I don't mind that because, like I say, I still go back to the banks of the Three Rivers. There's a picture. There's visual evidence of my loyalty to Pitt. I have a picture of me with an 18-year-old Afro Danny Marino.
That's great, but when it came time to sign on the dotted line to say this is where my allegiance will last forever – you decided Indiana was the place for you.
That's right.
You heel turned.
I have pictures like that.
On Carolina, Pitt.
Like I grew up with Lawrence Taylor and William Fuller and Kelvin Bryant and basketball, Kenny the Jet Smith and Jordan and Cecil Axum and all those other
guys. Not mention Worthy.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with any of those.
Big games.
And then he went to Carolina.
Yeah.
And then he went to Carolina.
Now listen,
that's what he did.
I followed my fandom.
I will take the shots from a lot of different people, but I'm sitting in a room now with one man who has no affiliations and Bucky, Matt Money Smith, who's born and raised on the south side of of Chicago, who now roots for not the Bulls.
Hates the Blackhawks.
Really
a little bit
and
there.
Sends tweets out about Go Kings
Love
Go.
The Kings.
And then lastly, Adam Rank, who's an Angeleno, who doesn't recognize the existence of his old football team, the Rams.
And now they're not here anymore.
And now roots for... roots for the Bears, and two, roots for this baseball team that has so little dignity that they don't embrace. Talk about embracing roots. They don't even embrace what they are. They're Orange County's team. They're Anaheim's team. No, they're L.A.
Yeah, but they started in Los Angeles.
If you had dignity, you would refuse to cheer for them until they go back
to Wrigley Field, right? Weren't they born in Wrigley Field?
Wrigley Field. The whole nickname of Chavez Ravine comes from the Angels when they would have their programs. They didn't want to say they were playing in Dodger Stadium. They said they were playing in Chavez Ravine.
Can I do some
house cleaning real quick?
Please.
True or false? I want you to be dead honest, Rank. Right. Understand that it will not. Your answer will not offend me in the least.
Okay.
Before you came in, I said it's my contention that you resent the fact that I'm a Kings fan.
Why would I do that?
I don't know. I just feel like none at all?
No, nope, because you work in the L.A. media market.
Yep.
You have close relationships with the kids who work over.
They are the best
the
people around.
You used to work for the Los Angeles Lakers. None of that bothers me. That's what happens.
I mean, thought for some reason there was a little bit of resentment there.
Long-suffering
King fans.
We're both, you know, well, you were there with the Dead Marsh years.
And
those types of things. That's fine.
My wife had a doctor's fingers inside of her getting ready to birth my first child when they were in the semis against the Colorado Avalanche after that historic goal against the Red Wings by the Detter.
It's not the most important thing, but one thing I would say, you know, if you guys, you know, you're leading voices here in Los Angeles for these Kings, listen, impress upon the management that they need to go back to the four and blue and the gold. I mean, the black and the silver is hokum.
I don't like that they don't have any purple or four and blue in their uniform at all.
Yeah, anymore. I don't.
Not even like a little trim.
They did for a while there.
They did, yeah.
I didn't
like that they got rid of it. They're just black and white. It's cool. The uniforms look great.
I like the black and white because that's the cartoon I remember. I remember when Gretzky came over. They were the deal, and Bruce McNall
88.
And those guys.
Yeah. That's when they switched
one of the great injustices in sports award history.
Absolutely.
Was in 1989 when the Hart Trophy, the MVP trophy in hockey, went to Wayne Gretzky instead of Mario Lemieux with his 199 points. I don't want to talk.
I want to button this though. I do want to button this Indiana University Pitt thing.
Yeah,
because here's where I come out on it. When you wear a Pitt, well, that's Pittsburgh Pirates hat, but when you wear any Panther gear or people see you cheering for the Panthers, the obvious question that they're going to submit to you is, oh, you went to Pitt? And you're going to say,
No, I went to IU. No, better.
See, you forsake your university.
I'm from the city.
Exactly.
How about that?
The answer to that question is university. No. Oh, you're from Pittsburgh. Oh, okay, so what, you just didn't go to college? Well, no, I went to IU. Okay, well, IU's got I'm arguably the greatest, one of the three greatest basketball traditions in the history of college sports. I guess.
Excuse me, except they're not good enough.
You know, because that's weird. Because you see people, especially here locally, if you went to UC Irvine or went to Fullerton or something like that, where you don't have a football team. Those people will end up rooting for UCLA or USC.
Some people, like Tim Tebow, has his cause that he goes out and evangelizes about. I am a foot soldier. But, okay. I'm not so provincial with my loyalties to Pittsburgh that I want to keep all the wisdom that I've learned from living on the banks of the Three Rivers to myself. No, I've gone out and spread it about in the Midwest. I went to small town Indiana. Then I went to the city of Broad Shoulders. And now I'm out here on the West Coast. Yeah. Who knows? Next stop, Asia. I don't know where I'm headed next.
Now, if I may, you don't do a whole lot of Indiana University basketball talk.
Well, here's what
happened. You do more Panther, Jamie Dixon basketball. That's what I think really chaps the ass.
Well, let me tell you why. Because they're not good. No.
Is this a Bob Knight thing?
Absolutely. No, Rank. That is an unfair charge that I will.
How is that unfair?
You only started
talking about the Pirates once they became relevant again.
Oh, well, that's
you get rid of.
Holy cow.
Hey, let me tell you two
things. We're just having fun here, Rank.
Two things. Let me answer both of these questions.
The smirk has left his face.
I take no accusations more seriously than these, and now I will address them both.
By the way,
the hypocrisy from the two of you, Matt Money and Adam Rank.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Did the Rams do something that you disagreed with, and so you cut them off?
They no longer exist.
They don't exist.
What do you want me to do?
The Blackhawks cross you, and so you cross them.
Jeremy Roenick for Alexei Zhamnar. All right. They put the games on pay-per-view. Right. It was called Hogvision.
I grew up poor,
Damashek. I couldn't afford the pay-per-view.
Then our stories
they
line
took
up.
My team.
Then surely you guys will feel my pain. When I was at Indiana University, I was a Hoosier loyalist. And really, in fact, I turned my back on the Pitt program.
Did you?
Even though I was a diehard, you know, Paul Evans, Charlie Smith, Jerome Lane, Sean Miller era Pitt basketball fan and football fan as well. But then I went to Indiana. I decided it wasn't so much an intellectual decision as it was emotional. I eventually became a diehard Hoosier guy. But when they fired Coach Knight, I was outraged. I announced. I didn't sit down at a typewriter and make a letter
like
to anybody.
I did.
You should have.
But I did announce.
You got to get it on the record.
I made it very clear that was it for me with Hoosier basketball for the next 10 years at least. They can't fire Coach Knight like that. I took no pleasure even when they went to the Final Four with Mike Davis and that gang. Remember Tom Coverdale and all those guys?
Well, that backstabber Mike Davis. I mean, come on, that was all garbage for him.
And then Kelvin Sampson, then Tom Crean came in. And a year ago, I decided, all right, 10-year probation. Uh-huh. I said, it's off now. It's lifted, and I'm going to return. You know who the joke was on, though? Dave Damashek.
That's right.
Because, like I said at the top, Bucky, this is an important lesson for you. You can say, all right, now I'm going to get back into it. Who's your basketball? It's time to get – but you know what? The heart – you know, it wasn't there. I tried. They were good. They were number one. They were a number one seed. I sort of shrugged about it. I cared more about what was going down with Jamie Dixon. Similarly, Rank, regarding the Pirates, I'm a chump if I stand by them when that ownership, not unlike what Money's describing with his Hawks and Bill Wirtz and company, that the owners, the Nutting family, was willfully thumbing their nose at the revenue sharing league wide. The Brewers, who play in a smaller market, were spending twice as much as the Pirates. There was no justification for that. I turned my back on them. Why, if they're not trying, why would I be such a chump that I would root for that team?
Now, did you adopt another team in the process? Were you with Rank down there in Orange County and all the Koi Tattoo monster truck driving guys at the Angel
games?
You know what?
Because
tap out shirts.
Because the cardinal rule in Studio 66 is no jive talk.
Yeah.
I'll shoot straight with you.
Yeah.
I lived a block north and a block east of Wrigley Field for about 7 years. And, you know, listen, there's something about baseball. There's something winsome about baseball.
Going to the
first
park.
Of all, because, yes, once mm-hmm. once the yeah. NBA and NHL playoffs are over, that's all there is. And so you and the everydayness of it. And if you have a great play-by-play guy like you do in L.A., you know, you have a passing interest. Right. You say, I hope they win. I'm not willfully.
Can you just cut to the chase and say yes?
I don't hate the Cubs. Another team. You like the Dodgers. You like the Cubs. But, of course, I mean, I'm not. It doesn't give me glee for them to win, but all right, better to,
Like anybody
listen.
That hops on the Cubs, good luck with that.
Yeah,
listen to Vin Scully.
Still though, I don't get.
So what's the difference? I don't understand. There's what a huge the difference.
There's a huge difference. You're talking about it. You were railing this whole week about pulling up the example of the Reds playing in spite of March. You're not rooting for the owner. You're rooting for the players on the field who are wearing Pittsburgh across their chest.
Yes, I hope
you support them, but no, you abandoned them. At their moment of need, when they needed you the most, it's easy.
Explain to me this.
To sit there in Three Rivers Stadium when we are family.
Does this happen every week on
going,
this podcast?
I did show after show.
Or did I do this? Did I create this? Sorry.
You did. As it happens, maybe
just
it's
a heads up.
Maybe the
just
story.
A heads up to our listeners. We're supposed to be talking about the draft.
We're getting
right
into
now.
It in one it's, second.
You know,
we're getting out in a second.
Everybody's hashed over the draft.
I've been 20 minutes doing this.
Moral indictments have been leveled at my end. I will not stand for that, sir. Now listen to me. I am allowed to turn my back on a team. What would you have me do? Sit and watch games? What should I do? Just sit?
Yeah,
sit on my couch in my home and watch.
That's what fans do. Yes.
No.
That's exactly what happened.
What I did was I took to the airwaves and I bellyached about it over and over and over again.
All the way from Los Angeles or Chicago or
right,
wherever
like
you were
I say,
at that
it was
point.
A, it was a little. Maybe my argument was undermined by the fact that I was on an ISDN from Los Angeles back into Pittsburgh. Nevertheless, my voice was heard by the people in Pittsburgh as I denounced the Nutting's terrible moves. And now, listen, about 3 years ago, they decided we're going to make a commitment now, financially and otherwise. I was on board.
Oh, look at you.
I think this is one of the cases the where you would son. Say his voice was literally heard, but not figuratively heard. Actually
literally,
heard speaking, but
not
it had no
figuratively.
Impact.
All right. Black tie is right. Let's try and talk a little bit of NFL draft here. My first question to you fellas is, and again, I'll say college football 24/7 podcast. Is it year round? Do you do it?
Yes.
You do it. Yeah. 12 months a year.
Absolutely. Yeah, we take a little bit of a hiatus, tiny bit of a hiatus in the summer, but for the most part, yeah.
But of course, like accountants have for the last 2 months, this is the busy season for these fellas. It's a fascinating phenomenon that seems like it's emerged in the course of our lives. The draft was important growing up, and sports nerds like me would pore over it every year, and it was an exciting thing to sit and watch. The interminable 15 minutes between picks, and I can remember in Pittsburgh, PA, you know, my mother Mo Damashek being like, "Come on, we got to go!" Like, no, the Steelers are picking in 6 more picks. I'll be there. It was right. It was literally 3 hours.
And whenever
later.
There was a trade, oh, not a trade, because they get 15 minutes to reset the clock.
I remember because like one morning we went to go, let's go watch the draft at like El Ranchito or something.
Right.
And by pick 12, you're just wasted.
Where do you
can't keep up that pace.
Why do you suppose the draft has emerged? And I guess it's not the NFL is the biggest one, but secondarily, the NBA draft is now kind of must watch. I feel to me at least it counts as much must watch television. What Matt Money Smith? What's the reason that the draft is now this 3-day event in prime
yeah,
time?
Yeah, I mean my contention has been fantasy football related, and it's that people out mm-hmm. there that are listening to the Dave Damashek podcast football program right now think they can do Bucky's job. They think they can be a scout. Mm. They think they can evaluate talent. They think Bucky is just a fortunate soul that was able to put on that scouting cap, carry around a yellow notepad with a pencil, and watch dudes play football.
Wait, that's not the case?
Exactly.
I know. Money's got this pretty well drawn out. Yeah. It's Wait. Almost as though that's what he thinks, Bucky.
Yeah, it is that. Well, it goes back to our – and it's ratings, you know. When we see the amount of traffic that the mock drafts get, that the – you know, when I was doing NBA stuff, that our draft conversation would get, our draft shows would get – they like it more than they do games. I mean, they do. They legitimately like it because they think they have the end. They think they can be a GM one day. I know I'm never going to play football. Physically, I'm not capable of doing that. But mentally,
you know what?
I could run a team.
I absolutely agree with money. I think the explosion of fantasy football and people being able to play pseudo GM and win championships and put together teams, I believe there's a faction of folks out there that believe, what? I can be a general manager. I know what a good player is. I can do this.
It goes beyond that.
It's people who play Madden. That's the big one because everybody goes into franchise mode. Yeah.
That's an interesting
fantasy
thought
football.
As well. I just loved – well, yeah, to me –
thank you for your time. First time on the podcast.
That's a new bit.
10 minutes late.
Fantasy football.
Black Tie sums it all up with a redundant remark.
10 minutes late, but that's
cool. And then he's going to be – don't forget Madden, too.
No, you know, I'm somebody. When I wasn't reading the college football rags and the middle of summertime, all those, I would take. You know, as a little kid, I had the Army men, and I loved setting them up, and it was an ongoing thing for me with my chums. I loved setting them up. I used to love to do, like, all right, I'll take the American soldiers, you take the Nazi scourge, let's set up what the battle scene would look like kind of thing. And I'd meticulously set them up, and I would take way too long for whoever I was there. And they always just wanted to cut to the chase. Let's get to the war part. I'm like, no, we're not – there will be no war. We're just leaving it set up. I think in that way, that definitely works for my brain, but there's something about – don't you love the previews almost more than you love once the games commence in the NBA? Don't you love
Bucky? I know. I'm sure you were the same way. Street and Smith's, Athlon. I mean, Lindy's. I would go to the magazine stand every weekend. Is the Lindy's here yet? And they're like, no, not yet. I mean, and you would freak out and read all the capsules of the college football upcoming season and who was coming in and who the recruits were before we had access to the internet, our extended brain, which makes all this knowledge that we've amassed useful. But
I know, isn't it? But so, given that it's so popular now everybody has opinions on guys, and it's not just everybody. Johnny Football that people know about. The people who wax. I know all of us have talked about this before. A casual fan who has opinions on which left tackle to take. You don't know. You really don't know. You only know what Bucky Brooks and his peers have told you, and yet the bitter emotional feuds people get into, like you like Luke Jokel over Eric Fisher because you don't watch much. Well, you have no idea. He's a 300-pound man who leans up against other 300-pound men. You have no ability to discern which one is better at that. But given that that's the case, that everybody has these opinions, Bucky, realistically, you as a scout, do you hear what the people are saying? Do you care? Because the curmudgeonly response is, you know, you see Bill Polian or Charlie Kasser, like, oh, yeah, you don't let that stuff happen. But I think it does happen.
Absolutely. It does happen. I cannot name names, but I will say.
Yes, you can.
But I will say over the weekend, I did an interview on a prominent radio station. 2 minutes later, a GM calls me. Who is the guy that you're talking to? I am upset about it. Da-da-da-da. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, why do you care? Like, why do you care what I say? Like, you run a team. So when you hear those inside the industry.
It was Gregson, wasn't it?
Those inside the industry talk about, oh, we don't pay attention to the newspaper. We don't read the internet. That is absolutely a lie. It's a falsehood. When I was working with the Carolina Panthers, we used to mock the mocks. We would keep up with 7 prominent mock drafts, post them up in the room, and keep track of how those mocks change. Because
so not mocking, condescendingly laughing, tracking to see what the collective opinion is.
We believe that certain writers were connected with certain teams, and they had information that they would put out. So we would monitor those guys. What's his name? Rick Gosling and the Dallas Morning News. He was one of the guys we felt like was a pretty clear authority on having information and putting together mocks. And we would track those mocks throughout the course just to see if we gain a glimmer of insight. And also the other thing that really irritates evaluators after the draft grades, if you want to get someone upset, give someone a D plus on their draft. They get so mad about that, and they worry about public perception because it does drive what fans think about their haul. And we've known, I want to say the 2012 class with Russell Wilson with the Seahawks, they gave their class, what, a D?
Or, they got a D or an F, yeah.
A D or an F.
Well, they took Bruce Irvin too high. They didn't like the two Utah State players with Bob Turbin and Bobby Wagner.
And Russell Wilson
was too short.
And so after the Super Bowl,
yeah, those
I think
were their
he
top
said
four
not,
picks.
Not bad for an F class or whatever. So they pay attention far more than we ever can think. And speaking of Seattle, Earl Thomas lit into me at a practice one day. He's like, I heard what you said. I was like, what are you talking about? I heard what you said on TV about liking Eric Berry over me. I was like, dude, I'm just telling you what all the scouts have said. Like, they would rank Eric DeBerry over you. And guess what? He went before you. So that was the opinion. Pissed off 3 years after the fact. And I like Earl Thomas. He's a great player, and we're cool. But, like, he was upset about this stuff.
But you said you liked him more than Taylor Mays, so you had him there.
Yeah, I did.
You did not.
I did.
Oh, no, you had him ahead of Taylor Mays.
That's what I'm saying.
Old stiff hip Mays, man. He had to wear it on draft day. Why am I dropping? Well, Taylor. When Coach told you should have come back when you were a top 10 pick, you probably should have just gone out.
Correct me if I'm wrong. None of the quarterbacks, including Johnny F., would be in the discussion for the top 10 or, what? Let's say, 15, 20 picks if we were 5 years ago in the day when Sam Bradford could make the amount of loot he could as the first overall pick, right? The fact that these guys are now being considered as options, it doesn't destroy your franchise on the same level. It still is going to kill, maybe not kill, but Bill O'Brien will be behind the eight ball if they do, say, go Blake Bortles as a for instance, and he doesn't work out. That probably will be the end of Bill O'Brien as a slow, you know, it'll be a slow burn, but still he won't make it.
I don't know if it's really changed that much. I know a lot of people have thrown the money factor in there. I think at the end of the day, you evaluate players for what they are and how they fit your program. A lot of what is done when you're ranking players is you're ranking that prospect versus what you currently have on your team. And so for a Johnny Manziel, a Teddy Bridgewater, Blake Bortles, you're looking to see, do I feel better about Ryan Fitzpatrick leading my team for the next few years, or can I see a situation where Johnny Manziel or Blake Bortles will make us better? We did Scout versus Scout today with Andy Dalton versus whoever the quarterback prospect is at 24. Would you feel better about Andy Dalton getting your team to the winner's circle, or are one of these current quarterbacks better? I think regardless of what the money is, you pick the player for what the player is and how you envision him blossoming over the next few years. And if you believe this guy can take your franchise to a higher level, you take him.
The difference, though, is when you think about, and Sam Bradford is our last guy. You know, Bradford's on that $78 million deal. It was the last one. So you're right. If the money was still the same, the Rams couldn't even possibly manage Johnny Football at two and pay him $45 million. They just couldn't tie up that amount of money in their cap in that position. But they can now. You know, not now they can. They actually can take him at 13 or even at two if they want to, because the money now, it's not sunk cost in that position that they can't get out from under. And that's where I think the difference is. Even though the Vikings took Christian Ponder, and I think that's the difference. People, you know, when they talk about, well, that, you know, you wouldn't be able to move on from Jake Plummer or Christian Ponder. Yeah, you could, because even then, the numbers weren't crazy for picking a QB at 8 or like Matt Leinart at 10 or 11. It was just nuts to take him number one. So that's where the biggest difference is that you don't have that $60 to $80 million payday for the number one pick.
Oof.
What do you guys make of this? I mean, it really is, you know, Mike Mamula level kind of, although Mike Mamula was a fine college player, but this Tom Savage business, I'm trying to even think of the equivalent. Off the top of my head,
Bucky's going to love this conversation.
Who is the one? Is there any example that of a guy who just, you know, I mean, and by the way, he was a big-time recruit. You know, and he goes to – it's not like he has just in the last 3 months. He
started in
– Rutgers.
At Rutgers, then to Arizona. Yeah. Foles to beats Arizona. Him out, and then back to Pitt, right?
No, he went there after Foles.
Oh, so because Foles came from Michigan State. Michigan.
Is it Michigan or Michigan State? I think it was Michigan State.
I mean, think about what we're discussing here. Yeah, we got a guy that goes from Rutgers to Arizona to Pitt. The guy that beat him out was from Michigan.
He leaves Arizona after Rich Rod comes in because he's not a fit for them.
Right.
He ends up and finds his way at Pitt playing in a pro-style offense under Paul Chryst.
You know what? And that's what's funny about it. Yeah, Foles was Michigan. Rich Rod came in. Foles left to go to Arizona. Rich Rod goes to Arizona. Savage leaves Arizona. All these tall drink of water slingers decide to move on from Rich Rod.
It's funny. It's a fascinating. I think he's a unicorn. I think he's one of those guys.
Meaning that
he's just like kind of a myth, a thing that we've created. He's a big, imposing quarterback that looks like the prototypical quarterback that's traditionally played a position forever. But when you really dig down and watch what he's done, I think he's talented, yes. But I don't think he should be in the same conversation as maybe the top six or seven guys that we're talking about in this quarterback class just because – I don't think his film puts him in that category.
Well, it's funny because I think it was round about October last football season, I tweeted at you, Daniel Jeremiah, and I think Gil Brandt saying, you know, because I'd watched him play for a couple of games as a Pitt football fan.
Yeah, of course.
The Hoosiers.
Should have been watching the Hoosiers in their chrome helmets.
No, I'm watching. Yeah. That alone is repellent as a Hoosier fan to watch them play in those ridiculous
hats. They're in the Big
hats.
Ten. What are they going to do? Yeah. What are they going to do? How are they going to compete, huh?
They got to be the
fancy uniform team. That's their edge.
I watched him and I said, you know, he really looks, you know, he cuts the figure of a NFL QB. Mm-hmm. But has anybody ever done nothing in college and then gone on to be a successful pro? Who is the equivalent of that? Is there such a guy?
Matt Cassel.
He's literally
nothing.
Yeah, right.
Nothing.
Good one.
He's really the only one. Matt Cassel is the only one. And the Matt Cassel story is fascinating because he was spotted at a pro workout by Matt Russell, who was working for the New England Patriots at the time, takes the information back, goes to New England. But I don't think anyone in New England expected him to materialize into anything. When you're taking
But the thing about Cassel, too, just to go back to that, remember, you know, I remember talking to Norm Chow, who was the OC at the time, and he said it was just a pick 'em. You know, it really was. It was Cassel or Leinart, and they decided, you know what, let's go with Leinart. He's just a tiny – and think about the college career that Leinart mm-hmm. had. That could have been Matt Cassel. I mean, that's how close they felt like those two guys were.
Now, in fairness good scouts, executives, even the late Al Davis, they'll go back and they'll ask their scouts to dig into the high school ranks and trying to figure out who were the guys that were supposed to be the players coming out of high school. Tom Savage was one of those guys. He was a 5-star recruit. He was heavily regarded. I mean, he was highly rated. He was a guy that was expected to be one of those premier guys, ahead of the Taj boys, ahead of all these other quarterbacks that are in the draft. Now, he goes to Rutgers, has a decent first year, gets beat out his second year. Like most of these kind of highly recruited quarterbacks, when he loses a job, he's like, I'm out. If I can't start, I'm gone. He goes to Arizona, sits out. Rich Rod comes in. He leaves because the system doesn't fit. Goes to Pitt. Now, playing for Paul Chryst, Paul Chryst did a great job with him because he struggled his first game, didn't really look good against Florida State, struggled the first part of the season. Midway during the season, Paul Chryst figured out what his guy could do, put him in a situation where he set him up for success. He had a lot of production and success, but I don't know if he's a transcendent
star. I'll tell you what, I don't want to poo-poo the recent optimism around this guy, but you know, he was playing with two of the best college receivers there are. You know, it's not as though people say, oh, that Pitt team stunk. What did you expect them to do? He was playing with two guys that are going to be in the NFL. He was throwing passes
young
to two
guys.
All right. What about this question comes to us from our pal Handsome Hank, and it kind of goes back to what we were just talking about there. Smoke screens. You know, all this noise from the media about what the fans want, what these pseudo experts would like to do, and it all leads to this talk of, oh, you can never believe any GMs around this time of year. How true is that? Do people really float things like, yeah, we're not interested in this guy? How does that conversation go down? Here's what we'll do. We love him. Now, PR guy, make this stay. How does that how organized are those sorts of rumors?
Well, it's kind of the master manipulation. Like, Money's a GM, and Sam is boy on the other side. Money can tell me something. I can ask him about a player. He can deliberately tell me something wrong, whether it's his opinion or not, or like, hey, Buck, man, we really like Johnny Manziel at 2. I, being the zealot, and particularly in this day and age when you have Twitter and all the other social forms of media, I go and say, oh, my God, the St. Louis Rams like Johnny Manziel. Sparks a wildfire. Like, that's how those rumors start. Like, I want to say they mentioned last week Johnny Manziel being connected to the Dallas Cowboys. There are a lot of things that will take place, you know, the last month of the draft process that leads people to think certain things. You'll hear people say, like, oh, a couple of teams are interested in this player. And a lot of times what you have is a scout calling that player just to make sure that his phone information is correct, that where are you going to be on draft day, who is your agent, all of that. But a player will take that, run with it, tell somebody, like, hey, these teams are interested in me, and it becomes a story. Like,
Bucky,
that's what it is.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, but what I've heard from a couple people is teams basically, they always want to trade down. They always want more picks. More than anything, that's what they want, because when you're doing your grades, these guys are so close in grades. Say you're picking at 5, the guy you have that's number 5 on your board and the guy that's 20, those grades are so close that what they ultimately want to do is trade down, get more picks, because they're still going to get someone they like a whole heck of a lot, and they'll get more picks out of it. So what they have to do is create not necessarily these smoke screens, but you got to bring all these guys in for workouts, even if you're not interested in taking them. So one team that, because every team falls in love with somebody, when they fall in love with that guy, they're willing to jump up there, trade with you, give you the extra third or the second, and you get what you want. And, you know, that's kind of how the smokescreen really ends up working.
Well, yeah, that's what we talked about.
Just
before I think you walked in, Buck, that's what Black Tie was asking about who is going to be that. Now, obviously, it's a surprise, so by definition, you can't tell us what a surprise is. But which is the one that will be the least surprising? Who is going to be that team that's going to want to jump up and get somebody?
I would look for the Atlanta Falcons to try and make a splash coming from 6. They desperately need a pass rusher. And in this draft, there are only 2, like, premier guys at the top of the board.
Can't they get Barr? Won't Barr fall to them?
I mean, Barr will be there, but it depends on, do they view Barr in the same light that they view a Jadeveon Clowney?
What's the price to do that?
Man, it's...
We know that Dimitroff will pay it because he did it for Julio Jones.
Yeah, I mean, what did St. Louis give up to move up? What did Washington give up to move up to St. Louis? It would be in that
two first rounds, two ones, two twos, two threes.
I think is what it was.
They
right?
Gave up a lot to move up. So if you're asking, to
if
get
you're
that
the
high
Texans,
cotton,
don't you have? I mean, that would be loco. I know, of course, they're 2-14, but they're not
away. That's a deceptive 2-14.
I know they're not far away at all.
It went
right
off the rails last year. Matt Schaub didn't play well, so they kind of fell apart. But if you think, looking at this team's roster, that they're one of the worst franchises in all of football, you're mistaken. I think with the Houston Texans, the one thing that you have to be leery on, however you rate Jadeveon Clowney, if you believe that this guy's going to be a perennial Pro Bowl, a guy that kind of changes the game in some capacity, when you bypass that and trying to be cute to accumulate more picks, you better hope that those guys add up to something that's comparable to what Jadeveon Clowney could be.
Well, and also think about division for the Falcons. I mean, you are in a division with Drew Brees and Cam Newton, and if you determine that there is no way you can win that division unless you can pressure those two quarterbacks, because those two teams basically are ahead of you right now, certainly defensively for the Panthers and the Saints all around, then that's when you make that kind of move. What's our window? How big does this impact our team? Which is why maybe giving up 2 ones makes sense for them to go get Clowney to have a dramatic impact on their defense in that division.
How wide-ranging is that sort of the reasons that you're going to pick somebody? Is it because we have to match these teams in our division? It's what our coach wants. This fits what our coach wants to do. What is that calculation? Or I assume that varies by organization.
It varies. It really depends. The one thing that I know just from playing when I played in Buffalo, it was all about winning the division, building a team that can win the division. Because if you win the division, you're guaranteed a playoff spot. So it's very important that you win that division. So you need to make sure that your team lines up to beat those division rivals on a consistent basis. In terms of trying to figure out how you're trying to bring in players, who carries the hammer, it depends on, is it the GM or the head coach? If the GM kind of wields the power, he will consult the coach and he will make sure that he brings him someone that he likes within his system. But ultimately, his job is to select the players that puts the team in the best position to be successful over the long term. Coaches think more short term. They think this year or right now, this is what I need. They don't necessarily have the vision or the perspective to think, here's how we can be good for the next 3 years in a row if we take these handful of players.
I could go. We could sit here for 3 hours. I don't want to keep you guys forever. So just a couple more draft-related things. This is this is a reference to an Indiana University basketball player, the Steve Alford syndrome. This is predates my
feathered
time
hair
in Bloomington. Yeah. Oh, by the
guy
way,
guy that can't stop feathering his hair, is that the syndrome?
Hear me now, believe me later. Follow Matt Money Smith at Matt Money Smith, and next time you see he's got an interview with the UCLA men's basketball coach, make sure you catch that. It's always terrific stuff. The chemistry.
He'll come around. I mean, who would have ever thought? You know Ben Howland. I mean, from his Pitt days.
I think to Washington is a long trip. It's a long trip.
My bad. I think he yelled at me, actually. two interviews ago, he yelled at me. I said, well, you know, you go to those three straight Final Fours, Coach, but I mean, the last half decade, you're talking 5 years. Oh, I didn't go. I'm sorry. Three straight Final Fours. My bad. I think that was. But yet, he kind of figured the show out and started to play some good old fashioned grab ass with us. And Alford is not there yet. He certainly is not there yet.
Yeah. One of the rare subjects who has thus far been immune to the charms of Money and Petros on
yes,
the radio show.
Immune.
I mean, answers. Yeah. He has no time for it. I don't think he dislikes them. He just doesn't have any time to answer their foolishness.
I just get my vision is when he hangs up the phone, he just middle finger right at the receiver. Like, you just wasted my time.
I'm a serious basketball man.
Is he obligated to do those interviews? Or?
Well, we're the UCLA station. They're great. You know, we get along great with their sports information department. So
SID is like, yeah, you got to do this.
Yeah, just come on, Steve.
And he probably yells at the SID.
Exactly. I think he's like, come on, you'll love these guys. They're great. And he's, he'll get there.
Will he be here long enough?
I hope so. You know, I hope so. I like that UCLA basketball. Now that they got the new Pauly, it should be great.
I got to get out there.
It's
been to the new joint
I'll
yet.
Tell you that you want to see, like a really cool just bit of sports history. What they did with Wooden's living room is really neat. For people that aren't out here, they took Wooden's living room after he passed away and piece by piece pulled it apart and reassembled it. So you can basically stand in his living room, his TV, all his books, in the exact place they were when he, and that's where he would watch his basketball and watch his tape. And it's really cool to see somebody, of his stature that it's there. And that's where the guy did his business, right there in that brown shag carpet living room. There it is.
This is where Sam Gilbert used to come over.
Really
too soon?
Really? That's John Wooden you're talking about, okay?
You can Google that name if you're a cynic like Rank. Now, Steve Alford. The Steve Alford syndrome is this. Steve Kerr had a very nice, had a very nice NBA career. He hit clutch shots in NBA finals and was a key member of those Michael Jordan Bulls. And Steve Alford was a quick flame out. Was Steve Kerr that much better than Steve Alford? Of course not. It's a matter of fit. That is that leads me now to the QBs. I don't think any of these guys, clearly, collectively, no one has these guys as slam dunk, definite superstar quarterbacks. So what is the best fit then for Johnny Football, for Blake Bortles, and Teddy Bridgewater? Where can they go that they'll thrive? Or for that matter, if you can think off the top of your head, of the teams you're hearing buzz that are looking at these guys, I hope he doesn't go there because that will not work out.
Man, it's tough. Let's see. Johnny Football can fit in a few different places. Johnny Football would be great in Jacksonville because he gives them energy. Gus Bradley's a high-energy guy. He gives them kind of a face of the franchise.
That's a perfect fit, right?
Yeah. He's a great
active
fit.
Active defense with a guy who's going to freelance.
Also,
do your thing, Johnny Football.
Money is probably tiring of me talking about this. Defensive-minded coaches, guys who come from a defensive background, they look at athletic run-around quarterbacks a little differently. Mm-hmm. They understand the challenges of slowing a guy down. So Gus Bradley is more apt to say, Johnny, you just go do your deal, make a handful of plays, and defensively we'll get it done. He also will fit in St. Louis because Jeff Fisher has a similar mindset and mentality. It's tough to imagine him going outside of those places, like where he would blend in, because I don't see him as necessarily a fit in Houston. I don't see him as necessarily a fit.
Because of Bill O'Brien. It's
Bill
a bad
O'Brien
fit.
Is more of a control guy, because offensive coordinators, remember, it always has to go back to them.
Right.
It has to be. We talked about this during the fall. It's about my system. What's that? I think the Raiders would be awful for him. If the Raiders can't deal with Terrell Pryor, at quarterback. How are they going to deal with Johnny Football? Like, I don't want to say they're one and the same, but they're very similar in terms of what they do and what they bring to the table.
Terrell Pryor cannot throw a football. He can't throw a football.
They were actually winning games.
I think Dane Sonsenbacher's spine is contorted in 90 different directions because of how he had to adjust his body to catch those god-awful Terrell Pryor passes.
You talk about Terrell Pryor.
You get DeVere Posey in a room and say, what was it like having to run routes and catch passes from that guy? And he'll break down and cry. It's so emotionally affected him. Posey will break down and cry.
Every big game, he was the best guy on the field. Rose Bowl out here versus Oregon.
The Rose Bowl,
Sugar Bowl,
he was
versus
tremendous.
Arkansas, he was the best. Every big game. Look, that was 31-4.
I'm with
Ohio
State.
Tebow. I'm not saying he's Tim Tebow-esque passing level.
Man.
But Bucky, he's a heck of an athlete, but damn, he can't throw the football.
What was their record with him last year? Like, I know Dennis Allen had whatever he was going to discover with Matt McGloin. But the Raiders were competitive in games when Terrell Pryor was the quarterback. And so if they can't settle on Terrell Pryor being their quarterback in the short term, how can they ever settle on Johnny?
I'll tell you what, and the other thing is, too, with Terrell Pryor, just in quick defense of him, there was nothing. It's not just he doesn't have the ability to throw. Even if he did, who's he throwing it to? There were zero threats on the field offensively for the Raiders other than Terrell Pryor running the football. They still wouldn't stop him.
Bucky, you know he is not an accurate passer. He is a less accurate passer than Jake Locker.
Let's make sure we put this out there before Twitter blows up on me. I'm saying, Terrell Pryor, I'm not saying he's an elite quarterback. However, in the Raiders situation, what he did last year, he was the only spark plug that they had. The fact that they couldn't comfortably have him as their quarterback, how are they going to deal with a guy that runs around and does similar things in Johnny Manziel?
Here's the way I'd put it. When I watched Terrell Pryor play at Ohio State, I saw a guy whose flaws were covered up by supreme talent around him and inferior competition in the Big Ten against him. When I look at Johnny Football, I see arguably the most exciting player I have ever watched in college football make plays, throw the ball beautifully, has a nice touch. Like when I watched Johnny, I mean, he's a legitimate quarterback. When I watched Terrell Pryor, I was like, okay, this guy's a hell of an athlete, and somebody's going to try to figure out how to use him, but, man, he can't throw the football. He's so inaccurate.
Yeah, I mean, I say that, but then, like, here's the thing, and I guess I'll go back to the same argument we have with Tom Savage, because I think Tom Savage was woefully inaccurate in most times. A very, very, very good coach who was a good designer would put his guy in a situation to make plays. A very good coach would have taken a Terrell Pryor, particularly in the Raiders. They would have done some things that have put him in a situation to be successful. Half rolls, read option, whatever you do those things to put your guy in a situation to be successful. With the Oakland Raiders, because they were uncomfortable doing that for Terrell Pryor, I just have a hard time thinking they can say, hey, we got Johnny Manziel, this is what we're going to do. Read option, quarterback draws, half rolls, bubble screens. I just don't know.
You don't have
Dennis
the faith
Allen
in the franchise to do what needs to be done. I got you.
I'm with Bucky. Yeah. If you put Terrell Pryor on the right kind of team, I absolutely could see Terrell Pryor winning games.
I think you got to be able to throw the football. You have to be able to throw the football.
But based on the recipe for Jacksonville success, hey, Terrell Pryor, go make a few plays for us. We got a good defense behind you. Just take care of the ball.
I know you saw him put it on your Steelers. I know you saw him do that.
Well, he made one play.
That's what I mean. That it was one play. It was a 78-yard run, and the rest of the game.
I think it was 92.
You know what I mean? The rest of the game, it's like, whoa, he just threw that ball 9 yards over Rod Streeter. Said, oh, there's a dirt ball. I mean, that's the problem.
That's why I would think Johnny Manziel would be great there, because he can do a lot of the similar things that Terrell Pryor can do, except he can also throw the football. So in addition to those things of getting plays for him, you can also count on him to make a throw on 3rd and 8 to move the chains.
Yeah, I don't have enough faith in Dennis Allen and Reggie McKenzie to think that they can surround him and put him in a situation where he can be successful.
Real quick, because I kept everybody here way too long. Just very quickly, though.
Yeah, Dave needed a haircut.
1983.
How about that?
He's wearing a hat, too.
I still don't have it. I don't have the haircut yet. I skipped it so I could get over here. How about that? That's commitment.
35 minutes
late.
They
cut your hair here.
Yeah, I got my hair cut today.
That's a commitment.
Jennifer
will cut
your
hair.
Right here.
You just go down and say, Jennifer, you got time?
How loyal is is Dave Damashek. He's so loyal, he continues to go to his barber and pays him.
That's so the,
out of
the
his
barber.
Way,
yeah.
Just for the sake of maintaining
Fantastic
that relationship.
Sam's.
The barber, I'm ugly.
The barber, you're loyal to, your Pittsburgh Pirates that you grew up with, not so much.
Fan, oh, devil, wow. Fan, I don't care for this. Now listen.
There's a
1983,
callback.
The reason that the 2012 draft it will go down in history is better even than the 1983 draft is because Todd Blackledge and to some degree Tony Eason were busts. It does not appear, at least, at the first round QBs of 2 years ago, and he is going to be an abject bust of a guy. Who is going to – but so that's the anomaly. The reason that it's such a special group is that nobody is a complete flameout. So it's unlikely that that will repeat this year. Who's going to be the, who's the most likely to bust? Bortles, Bridgewater, football, Carr. I mean, I don't even bring Savage into it, but you know, because
it's so hard because without knowing what team they're going to, it, you know, there's so many different factors in why a player busts. You know, most of the time it's a misevaluation, thinking that a player would fit into a scheme that is not conducive to his skill set. If I had to say a guy that I would worry about. I worry about Blake Bortles a little bit. I worry about...
Because why? Arm strength.
Not so much of arm strength, but when I watch him play compared to watching Johnny Manziel and Teddy Bridgewater, he's a notch below them in terms of like how he plays the game. I also have a little bit of concern about Derek Carr. All the same issues that you bring up with Teddy Bridgewater, his size, his frame, his, you know, his ability to withstand the punishment. Derek Carr and Teddy Bridgewater weigh exactly the same. They're the same frame, same size. And, in fact, Derek Carr has smaller hands. Derek Carr has a 9 1/8 hand. So when you think about playing and being able to throw the ball in inclement conditions, it could be an issue. Last year, 18 quarterbacks played that were 6'2 or shorter. I'm okay with those guys being 6'2, but the big common denominator is they all have big hands. Johnny Manziel has the biggest hands of the crew.
And that's because you can grip the football and spin it. You can really throw it. That was the one thing that we recognized coming out of the combine when we were on the field and Russell Wilson did his throwing. Is
big
his hands are
hands.
So big, and
by
he was zipping
has,
that ball, throwing
Russell
it.
Russell has a 10 1/4 hand. So when he grabs the ball, like he has full ownership, control of throwing the football.
Last draft question. Who will the Texans take?
Oh, Clowney.
Or will they trade out of it?
Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah, they'll take
Clowney, Manziel, trade out of it. Clowney, everybody
no
says.
Question.
Rank, you say Clowney. Clowney.
Sure.
Yeah, I think so. But then you say what you said, Bucky. If they could trade down to 6, you know, if the Falcons are willing to go up and get him.
Yeah, if they get the right price.
That would be, that, you know, I would do that
and
in
if
a heartbeat.
Guys, anytime you're thinking about trading, you have to be comfortable with what players could be available at that pick. You have to have 2 or 3 options for this is who I was selecting. We trade down to 6. I'm comfortable with the fact that Jake Matthews, Sammy Watkins, or Khalil Mack would be there. We're fine with either one of those.
That's
guys.
That is the one reason why I don't think they traded is because there is such a gap between Clowney and everybody else.
I want to, you know, if I'm going to go down, I'm gonna go down with as many talented players as I can. And so I know people talk about fit and scheme, and oh, he doesn't fit the 3-4 scheme. Understand this: the game is played 70% in your nickel package, so we won't see Jadeveon Clowney lined up.
Here's a crazy idea. Here's a let me just throw one wild idea. If not, it's not that insane, really. Imagine that defense is good. It's got some great pieces, Cushing coming back, presumably in reasonably good health with J.J. Watt and everybody else. What if I've been long advocating, just take A.J. McCarron at the top of 2 or Derek Carr, whatever is there. You'll get by with that. What if they would just move back a couple slots and then take Sammy Watkins? This then becomes an unstoppable offense. Who's ever pulling the trigger unless he's a bum?
They took Tammy's teammate last year, new Cobb.
I know. Yeah. I know it. Yeah, so I'm saying now all of a sudden you have an offense that's lethal.
Yeah, but I don't think.
Even though you don't even have anybody throwing the ball.
Oh, how dare you? Ryan Fitzpatrick, the Amish rifle.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. That's your trigger, man.
I think the bigger thing is you have to look for is there's a common denominator between the elite defenses and those teams that are going to the playoffs. You have an opportunity to build a juggernaut on defense.
That's right.
You had a chance to build what San Francisco has in Justin Smith and Alden Smith on that side. J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney playing side-by-side. Whitney Merciless on the other side.
You hear where he's going with that, check? Same side. Same side, Jadeveon Clowney and J.J.
I like
Watt.
That. Everybody
good
loves
luck
to
with
say,
that.
Like, yeah, try and handle which side you're going to – yeah, I like him on the same side.
Load it up.
The only reason I said it, in Carolina, we went to the Super Bowl with a D-line that featured Julius Peppers, Brinson Buckner, Chris Jenkins, and Mike Rucker. Those four guys masked the fact that we had 2 undrafted free agents playing at corner. Anytime you have a dominant pass rush, you have an opportunity because you can knock the quarterback down. The Houston Texans would have arguably the best front line in football if you have Jadeveon Clowney playing alongside J.J. Watt and Whitney Mercilus. That's a lot of production playing against Andrew Luck twice a year. I kind of like their odds.
It breaks my heart to say that we can't – I mean, the thing that Matt Money Smith has said on a number of occasions is, next time I come on the podcast, let's talk about sandwiches.
Yeah.
And once again, I feel like it has to go by the boards here because it's been a marathon. But Matt Money Smith
is just like your pal Jimmy Kimmel's Matt Damon, our sandwich conversation.
It really is true.
It always gets bumped.
Matt Money Smith is one of the preeminent NBA talkers. Very quickly.
Yeah.
Bucky, just keep the headphones on. You're not leaving yet. Please, don't dare.
I got a thing with the Giants. What? Yeah, the Giants. Giants.
The New York Giants? What do you mean? You're going to be on the phone with them?
You're going to be their
GM? Just sit here and listen in.
Hello?
It's Eli.
Hello?
I don't know if it's going to work out here anymore.
Yes, it is.
What's going on there, Buggy?
They seem to like Tom Savage better than
me.
I'll
tell you what, this Ryan Nassib, he's terrible. I don't know what the hell they were thinking drafting him.
Look, I do. Can you call me back in like 5 minutes? We're wrapping up this thing. Just 5 minutes and I'll be good.
Bucky's putting the Giants on blast.
Whoa! I have never felt better than I do right now.
Yeah.
High hat to an NFL team.
They did his guy Justin Tuck dirty. They did Justin dirty.
Bucky, I don't want to keep you. I just want to get Money's opinion and your opinion on L.A. right now, the epicenter. We don't have to break down LeBron's chances or anything else. L.A., on one side of the hallway, they fire Mike D'Antoni, or I guess, well, no, he left. They didn't meet his stringent demands, and he was ridiculous.
Listen, I'm coming off the worst season in franchise history, but here's what I'm going to need you to do. You're going to have to pick up 2 years of my option.
Here's the question.
I have to resign.
I guess we could talk Sterling.
Yeah.
I mean, legally, I don't know what the league, if they can actually punt him, but I imagine
they're going to try like it.
Yeah, but the one thing about that is, is it impossible, because Money is sort of a Renaissance man and can delve into politics and high finance and all that. What about this? Is this pie in the sky? Wouldn't it be the perfect punctuation and make it a feel-good story to now that the witch has been vanquished and is dead, why not make it a Green Bay Packers kind of thing? Why not let
community team?
Seriously, wouldn't that be great? All these celebrities want to buy the team. Everybody wants to buy the team. Everybody's in on it. If you're a B-lister or up, then you're in on. You're a part of some group trying to buy the Clippers. Why not expand it and make it LA's team?
Wait,
if you're the
minute.
Clippers, this would be a great, because the Lakers are the team of Los Angeles. Once and for all, you would. By the way, as I said the other day, I think Magic Johnson gets them and makes that the destination in the NBA more than it already is. There's a chance even that they will win LeBron and who knows who else if they can further the gap between themselves and the Lakers. But why isn't that a nice idea?
Or is
that
just ridiculous? It was a nice idea in 1960.
Yeah,
you know, in 2014 when Larry Ellison, that's my like Larry Ellison is one of my favorite subjects to talk about. You know, when you get into the world of billionaires and David Geffen, who's, you know, so much more wealthy than Spielberg and Katzenberg when you get into the DreamWorks triumvirate, and the guy's worth like $7 billion.
Oof.
Okay, Geffen is. So Oprah, who's part of the trio, is worth $2 billion, or about $2.5-3 billion. Remarkable for a celebrity, you know, for a daytime talk show host, $3 billion. Larry Ellison, the man behind Oracle, is worth $46 billion. And like, if you were to list his assets, what do we got over here on Ellison's asset sheet? Are we sure he can cover this $1 billion sale? What's that? He owns Hawaii? like literally Hawaii?
Not figuratively.
Yeah.
Literally owns Hawaii.
Yeah, the island of Lanai is owned by Larry Ellison, the man owns Hawaii. That, like, to me, that was is a great, that's as good an owner as you can get. Oh, our owner? Yeah, what does he do for a living? I don't know, but he owns Hawaii. Is there anything better?
Cuban put little 12-inch flat screens in everybody's locker? Yeah, I own Hawaii. Yeah.
Right. We're doing our training camp out in Hawaii because I own it.
Get on the sign-up sheet. There are only 15 players on the roster. You each get an island for 3 months
that's
every year.
LeBron signs What's he get? Maui.
He gets Hawaii. I gave him Hawaii.
But, you know, listen.
It's a grand plan check, sadly, in the age of the Milwaukee Bucks with no assets, no place to play, the lowest ratings on television and radio for $550 million. The collective ownership by the public just ain't going to happen, sadly. It's what makes the Packers so special.
Need some money.
Rank would like, and I've seen other people floating this, they're not going to Seattle, right? I mean, this is going to be L.A. That would be a failure for the league if they left L.A.
Why would Donald
Donald Sterling ultimately, because of his, his ugly words, then somehow force a team to leave the city?
Nobody cares.
It's a failure.
Nobody would care.
That's simply not
true. The Clippers left, nobody would care.
We care.
No.
It's a
maybe
small,
4 years ago,
dedicated audience. They are a bigger brand nationally than they are locally, which is what's so interesting about the Clippers. Yeah. I don't know if there's any other team in professional sports that is bigger outside their home market. I mean, that literally is the case with the Clippers. If you look at jersey sales and percentage of jersey sales per market, nationally, the percentages are higher.
I'll give you one. The Raiders. I bet you they're big. Yeah, they have a huge national
LA,
profile,
yeah.
And they don't
especially
sell out
LA.
Their games.
Yeah, right. that might be the only one.
Lob City.
But, you know, and I know I bash on Kobe quite a bit, but is this not now true that Kobe Bryant's bullying is the cause? He wanted D'Antoni, and then he turns his back on Mike D'Antoni and wants him fired. And this nonsense that, I mean, I don't know what name they're going to recruit to be the head coach of this Lakers team, but it doesn't change the fact that Kobe Bryant makes way too much money, at least to this point, as Money has talked about on his show, is not willing, like Tim Duncan has been, or Tom Brady, or so many NFL QBs who say, "All right, I'll take a hit,
I'll take a haircut.
Move the money around." I'm sure they still ultimately get about the same amount, but there's a way to manipulate things. Kobe Bryant has indicated no willingness to do this, and now all the Lakers apologists, to the detriment of the team going forward, have now said, well, you can't really beat D'Antoni up too much. Phil Jackson couldn't have done any better either with this team. I mean, they just got hurt. What could you do? Not make your backcourt an average age of 87 years old. what do you think was going to happen? Pau Gasol is an old man. Yes, you thought that the foundation of your team with an average age of 35 was gonna stay healthy and be a legitimate contender.
That's the problem. They should
in the
have,
West.
They should have traded for somebody like Chris Paul when they had the chance.
See what he did there? Backdoored it on you.
He did.
Chris Paul,
he
Dwight did. Howard, same team. And guess what? They still would have never touched the ball because Kobe would have insisted on hogging it on every possession.
Isn't it dominant
two guard? But
he wouldn't be playing. He'd be hurt still.
Isn't that, Shakespearean? Isn't it really some sort of Shakespearean Richard III kind of thing that he is now I was watching The Godfather. I was watching Godfather 2 a couple weeks ago, and I realized Kobe is Michael Corleone at the end of Godfather 2. Kobe will have.
I thought you were going to say Hyman Roth. I got excited there for a second.
I think Hyman Roth just got the bums rush from the Clippers.
Yeah.
I'm
Mo Green.
The end of Godfather 2 is Michael Corleone has destroyed or chased away everyone. And he has his empire. He has all the money, but he's all by himself and sitting alone in that chair, sad, reflecting on his deeds and how he wound up in this spot. That's Kobe Bryant sitting on the bench all by himself. Why are we out of the playoffs again? Or maybe we're scratching into the eighth seed here in the West. Who did this to you, Kobe? You did this to you.
But why is he so sad at the end of the movie?
I was going to say that's the difference. Kobe's not sad. He's angry, and it's not his fault. He's this is the best way I can that I can put Kobe. Players like Tim Duncan say, I'm going to take less money so guys can come play with me. Kobe says, they can take less money so they can come play with me.
That's exactly right.
That's the best way I can put it.
He lives under the delusion that and Lakers fans will say, yeah, but I mean the opportunity to sign and play with Kobe Bryant, don't they want to? No, why? Who?
There is not a player in the NBA they would like to join up with less.
That really is the truth. Yeah.
He's
a tremendous player who is damn near impossible to play with.
All right, listen. We've covered it all except for sandwiches, so let's cut it off there. Tremendous work, fellas, these last few months in covering just about every wrinkle there is to cover about the NFL draft. It is a week
can
from
I,
now.
Can I, with the experts here in the studio, I was supposed to do a body language breakdown.
Oh, my God. Yeah. What
do we got going here?
Money wanted to reel off.
Fantasy football.
Money wanted to thought that we could do a little.
Bucky can't blow off the Giants a second time.
Goodbye to Bucky Brooks. There he goes.
Oh, my God. He's talking to
Jerry Reese. Hold on. Shh. Listen. Oh, damn, they're going to take C.J. Mosley. He's on with Jerry Reese.
All right, real quick with Money. Money is
aware of... the Galaxy are calling for me.
Has Black Tie seen it? Our favorite game show here, that Black Tie the cinephile, who has not seen any movies.
He hasn't seen classic movies. That's his big thing. It was weird, though,
because he has seen Speed Speed 2.
That's good. I can glean something from that statement.
It's weird because he professes, and he's seen a lot of post-95 movies, but it's weird. If you're somebody who loves films, you would still go back and watch
these. It's the time factor, Rank. Shaq mentioned about his geeky younger years and having time to do stuff.
What are you busy with?
Busy right now, just doing a lot of stuff.
Not right now. Okay, I'm busy right now, too. But
he's got 2 hours
plus
worth
I also contend that TV shows are the way to go. TV shows are better than movies. Like, it's just, especially in this day and age that we live in with
all right, but if
cable
you haven't
channels.
Seen anything pre-94, so if your thing is that you only see movies post, but then you say, then I don't care about those movies
well,
either.
I'm not saying I don't
TV.
Care. It's just there's so much battling for my time right now. I got to figure out what to give it, you know?
Do you go to the theater at all?
I do. I'm actually going to the theater tonight to see The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
I want to see that, but it's still a theater.
Have you seen the trailer for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
What is going on?
Ooh, so great.
So great.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
I have a five-year-old boy, Jean-Claude Van Damischek, who loves the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I watched the trailer with that in mind and thought, well, this isn't a movie he can see. This is ridiculous. Who is this movie geared for? Adults?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's kind of a movie about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is
nostalgia.
Now a grown-up picture?
It's nostalgia there.
It's what The Dark Knight has done to all these movies. Yeah.
Every movie, this is a little too dark.
You see these two guys? There you go.
Yeah,
that's
but what
who
about,
it's targeted at.
All right, so what are we going to do then with Starberry Shortcake? Is she going to start tarting it up a little bit? I mean,
that's a good question.
Then Rainbow Bright becomes a lesbian.
And then
she fights crime. No, it just makes sense.
What about Jem? Because you know she's truly outrageous. How does that one look?
I think you know what that means. she has no boundaries. Black Tie.
Yes.
Have you seen it? Money thinks he can name 10 movies that you have seen.
Let's do it.
This is an impossible feat that would rank up there with Oral Hershiser's Scoreless Inning Streak.
We're going 1988. We're going Hershiser 88 on this.
That's going to give you, to make it fair, we're going to give you.
You think you can. There's no way you can.
Okay, here we go.
He hasn't seen 10 movies, period.
I got enough with Speed and Speed 2 and The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Here we go. Are we ready? Number one.
Wait, I know you might say Entrapment, but he did reveal on the previous episode that he's seen Entrapment.
Okay, so I can't do Entrapment.
No, these are movies that he has. These are movies Black Tie has seen.
He saw Entrapment.
Black Tie has seen
10,
8 movies.
I am going to go 10 for 10 right now, and they will not be focused, so don't paint this man with the same brush you paint Donald Sterling if I start down a certain road, okay?
Right. But before you begin, do we want to get all 10 movie titles out and then you respond?
I think he goes one at a time. One at a time and see how far I can get. Here we go. Number one, Boys in the Hood.
I have seen Boys in the Hood.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Number two, Iron Man.
Of course. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. That's easy. Doing nicely.
Here we go.
Number three, Old School.
I have not seen Old School.
How have you not seen Old School?
Oh, no.
Oh, I figured I was going to bounce around, get my comedy in there. Here's my superhero movie. Here's my African-American on the street. You know what? Okay, so here we go. Let me see if I can keep going and maybe dismiss one.
All right. Mulligan.
You ready?
I'm ready. Go ahead.
Poetic Justice.
I have seen Poetic Justice.
Yeah.
I was young and my siblings were all watching it. Yeah. I don't know if I sat down like I was just there.
When they ride in the back of a FedEx truck or whatever they're in.
All right,
here we
go.
Older siblings watching
here we
it. Hung out and watching
now
it.
Now watch this. I'm going to go pre-94 on you guys.
All right.
Uh-oh.
Hollywood Shuffle.
I have not seen Hollywood Shuffle.
Okay.
That was not one of the ones he was going to say.
Okay. Really, you have not seen Hollywood Shuffle?
I have not,
no. I mean, this is... What?
Yeah, that's...
Where do I go from here?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
You were trying to be like Icarus there. Come on,
Too close to the sun. My wings have melted.
You
thanks
got
a lot, Black
Tie.
One more. All right, you have two X's. That's Family Feud. You usually get up to three.
All right. See, now I don't want to do too many superhero movies because it's clear that that's a genre that he subscribes to.
I think that's so your sweet spot.
Yeah, but I don't want to do that.
We've got
a channel. All right. So here we go. I truly believe he's going to say yes to this. Okay. I really do. Shallow Hal.
I have not.
Oh,
that's it.
Wouldn't it be great?
Shallow Hal.
He has seen Speed 2 Cruise Control, so.
I was so hopeful he had seen
Have you seen Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo?
No, I have not.
How about Beat Street? You've seen Beat Street.
Let me tell you another thing about my movies.
I have not.
Let me tell you another thing about my movies. Not a huge Ben Affleck fan as an actor. But huge fan when he's involved behind the camera.
Oh, well, he's directed two movies, so add those to his...
Way to go.
The Town, you've seen The Town?
I own The Town, correct.
I'd be great if the first one I named he hadn't seen. I love Ben Affleck.
I love the movies that he's in.
The only one he's directed, Black Tie, hasn't seen.
Yeah.
All right, Black Tie, bring it home for us. Money, I don't want to tie you up, but real quick, give us your Black Tie, your body language. He is the body... Play your theme music, actually.
It's time for Black Tie's quarterback body language breakdown.
Shout out to Dick Banks again. Me and him got in the studio, put out another classic.
Tight.
Good times working with Dick Banks.
Yeah, Pharrell-esque.
Sit tight. All right, so real quick, yesterday I got the assignment from Sheck. Sheck's like, you got to do a body language breakdown with these quarterbacks. And this year I was at the combine, but I was not out on the field like I was last year, and I got an up-close look at Geno Smith and knew from the start that he was a guy who I quote-unquote said was too cool for school, and that was bad news for the Jets.
Bad body language.
Yeah, terrible.
Okay.
Terrible body language.
Black tie. This is legit.
So yesterday I sat down and watched a couple of our first drafts, which are on NFL.com, and just, you know, watched these guys speak in interviews, watch their body language, and the three main quarterbacks, you know, the three most talked about quarterbacks, Johnny Manziel, Teddy Bridgewater, and Blake Bortles. So I'm going to break down these guys real quick
okay.
Before we wrap the show here. Johnny Manziel. It's pretty obvious, guys. This is a guy people gravitate to. Love him or hate him, this is a guy who's fun. He's having fun with the game. He's out there just playing. You want to play with a guy like this. You know, I'd have to liken him to – he's not – Russell Wilson's way too, like, buttoned up, way too, you know, heads on shoulders. He's like a very cool type of Russell Wilson. Like, you gravitate to Russell Wilson because he's a professional. But with Johnny Manziel, you just want to have fun with this guy. It's like – yeah, this guy's coming to play, so I'm all in on Johnny Manziel.
Good body language.
He gets your top
great
grade.
Body
good body language.
Top grade, for
making
sure.
Making money.
You know, I mean, he's...
yeah,
I mean,
what about that?
Guys,
you have no beef with the extracurricular body language?
It's done compared to Cam Newton, who does the Superman stick and all that stuff. There's something with Cam Newton that just seems like so
I have no
for
beef
the camera.
With it. Philip Rivers does it, too. I like it.
I love Philip Rivers. I met him in person. It was great. Cam, though, he is...
It always goes back to who he knows.
My first impression of Philip Rivers was great.
Because I used to hate Philip Rivers, and I met... I was like, dude, I would
Black
love to
Tie
play that.
Money. Here's
fire it up.
The real trick to Black Tie's body language rankings is when he can name drop. I've met him. I've spent time. Yeah. That's really what
I'm
talking
about. I met Russell Wilson. Great body language.
Yeah. So, I mean, just compare...
He's a friend.
He's a personal friend.
Hey, it's our role.
Listen,
compare Manziel to Cam. Cam's all about the show. There's a little something there. It's just too not authentic. With
so
Johnny,
Cam's in the draft
real.
This year.
No, it's not. I'm just saying, you know. So just give some context there.
Why you gotta talk about old S, huh?
Let's move on to Blake Bortles now. Blake Bortles, he was a tough one, tough guy to peg. He's very bland, and that's not a good thing. You don't want your quarterback to come in the locker room and. You're not even sure if he's the quarterback.
He's bland?
Yeah, he just has sort of an easygoing way about him. It's not terrible, but again, this is my quarterback. This is a guy that needs to command the huddle. I need a guy
who looks 38.
Yeah, he does have a little bit old to him. It's just like a mix of like
Not Freddie Mitchell, 38. Freddie Mitchell looked like he was 70.
Oh, you know who he I realized.
Bortles, you're right.
You know who you can look up? I encourage you to go on the Google and check this out. Look at Eric Lindros at his retirement press conference.
That's a good poll.
And look at Blake Bortles, who's about to get drafted. Eric Lindros, the old NHL player, when he retired, looks like Blake Bortles looks right now.
Yeah. So, anyway, I mean, so with
that's
Blake,
a good poll.
So with Blake, you just don't – I'm worried that he's the kind of guy who would be okay not being the starter. Like, his demeanor just seeing screams like, take it a little bit easy, and I would stay away from that. If you like the body language, I would just stay away from Blake Bortles. That's my take.
I'll bring that up to him I'm moderating a panel with Blake Bortles on Wednesday night in New York City in Times Square.
He's an even-keeled guy.
Yeah, so for a new era.
New era? You can get me a cap? You can get me a cap there, right?
What size melon you have?
See, I should have never brought it up. It's embarrassing.
7 5/8.
I wish. I got a look at this. I got a pebble head.
6 1/4.
Jeez. No, I'm 7 to 7 1/8, depending.
Oh,
I know. It's a tiny head. Oh. It's just it's too bad, isn't it?
Poor small thing. Head. Poor little fella, you.
Last guy, Teddy Bridgewater. Guys, I got to say, not a fan. Not a fan of Bridgewater's body language at all. He has this look and vibe to him that it's almost entitled in a sense. And with guys like that.
Self-entitlement.
When it doesn't go right, they tend to not be accountable for why they're not.
Would you say it's like Cade McNown-esque? Is that kind of what you're thinking of here?
Yeah, it's just a little bit.
Gabbert-y?
Gabbert had a little, like, Gabbert was just scared. Gabbert looked scared.
He's a scared coward.
Yeah. Bridge on the other hand feels like he believes in himself, which, I mean, you should.
Maybe a little Brandon Whedon in him there. Brandon Whedon always quick to point that finger. Somebody else.
And you don't
fault.
Want that as a quarterback. He's the kind of guy that I just don't. He looks like not a great teammate.
I feel bad that Bucky had to go take that call. He could have passed this info on to Reese.
I think he would have Deacon Jones head slapped you for the Teddy Bridgewater comment. Because I think Teddy is offsided. Is like one of the best teammates. His guys love him. They would lay in the street for him. He insisted that Louisville not go forth with their Heisman campaign because he was uncomfortable.
Black ties eyes see what most human eyes don't see. You got to just turn it over to him and trust that he knows what he talks about.
I will say this. I do believe, I have not watched the Factor in a long while, but I do believe Bill O'Reilly has moved on from Tanya Ryman as his body language expert. So you might want to be careful here. Shaq Black Tie might have a future with the Factor there over at Fox News as his new body
language.
We got to
get the word out here, Black Tie. At least, you know, make sure that you send this file over to all 32 teams just so that everybody has it.
Yeah, well, one of our listeners, I forget his name right now, forgive me, but he threw out the idea of like, hey, we should always have like an interview session, like just how John Gruden does his QB camps. Mm-hmm. We should bring guys in here and
just
do a body language break.
Just have him walk the catwalk. Have him walk out in front of Black Tie, move around. You give them simple sort of.
You got to do
physical.
Like you got to do like your introductions. Do some play intros. You know, getting the huddles together.
Do some jumping.
Being on the sideline. Right? You know, getting guys pumped up after a touchdown, after interception. What you know, all that stuff.
What about John Brinkus' sports science Black Tie's body language? We put you in a lab and you have them. All right, now show me touchdown celebration. Now,
how do we not? No, easy one. Just walk right into a room. Let's see. Do people look at you?
I like
do
this
you
idea.
Command do we, yeah, attention.
That's got to be something we do on NFL Now.
Well, mm-hmm. I was going to say, it's Thursday, May 1st, and earlier today on NFL Network, we broadcast Mike Mayock's conference call. Maybe we do a conference call. You know, we make Black Tie here available to the national media.
I like this.
They
money
can
guy.
Submit. They could submit questions.
Do you guys have a producer in College Football 24/7?
Oh, wow. Black
See,
Tie.
See, that's what I'm talking
Don't be
about.
A stinker. Don't do that.
I like that, Black Tie. I like
no, it's
that
a good
question.
Idea.
We just get. Yeah, I mean,
consummating
yeah.
the trade.
I mean,
here.
You got to move on. You got to move on.
It's a chance for him to grow.
We're not going to hold you back. A soundboard.
Yes, yeah, soar. Spread your wings. We'll try and make do. With whoever replaces you. All right, listen. Matt Money Smith, terrific stuff as always. Thanks for hanging in for a marathon session.
Good to make it in.
Bucky Brooks. Listen, Black Tie, we must have the sandwich conversation. And once we're in season, we ain't going to do it. So make sure we have that on the books at some point before the season gets going.
Speaking of superhero movies, Dave Damaschuk, your interview with Hugh Jackman, a.k.a. Wolverine, is up on NFL.com right now.
Hugh Jackman interviewed.
What a time we had. You know what I did to him, too? You know what? I found this shocking. He did not know He did not know the Michigan fight song, which is the equivalent, as I told him, it's the equivalent of being named Roxanne and not knowing the Police have
really?
A song about you. Shouldn't he know the Michigan Wolverines fight song as Wolverine? He didn't, but I taught it to him, so that's one thing that happens in there. Check that out. I hear Taylor.
Did you just come right up? Is that what you did, or did you play it for him? Did you have
I
actual
audio? I asked
him
if he knew it. He did not. Then I said, well, let's rectify that right now. And then he sang, and, you know, ever the salesman, he turned it into a promo for the X-Men picture.
Impressive.
But then we addressed some philosophical, some moral quandaries.
He told a pretty fun story about him and Tom Brady working out at 8 a.m. in the morning.
You don't have to ruin the whole thing.
I'm
but
not
also,
ruining it.
There's a new NFL out, our butterfly effect, our animated thing with the fellows over there at Bindle Dog. Great job on the 1989 draft. Did you know 4 out of the first 5 picks wound up in the Hall of Fame? The 5th, Tony Mandarich. So we tell that mostly positive tale and the ugly bust of Tony Mandarich with our latest animation. That's at NFL.com as well.
One of my favorite Hugh Jackman quotes. Sorry to jump you there, Shaq. And there's no reason why it should be my favorite, but for some reason it just – he's being interviewed for, you know, Jean Valjean and Les Mis is hitting the silver screen. And for just the way he said it, they're like, you know, why – why did you do it? You know, you gotta make sure your singing voice is right, and you know it's such a depressing film, and Jean Valjean's such a challenging role, and he just kind of did the actor thing where he sits, he has a dramatic pause, and he just went, "It's a role of a lifetime." It's a role of a lifetime. It's like, yeah, I guess it is there. Role of a lifetime.
Did you ask him about Viva Laughlin?
Viva Laughlin.
Oh, that TV show.
Yeah.
That's right.
Viva
I forgot about
Laughlin.
That.
Yeah,
the
that
musical was a TV show he did.
That, and it only lasted for 2 episodes or
who
or
could have,
so.
Who could have envisioned that outcome?
This was only 3 or 4 years ago. It's really weird.
It's not too far ago, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the equivalent of George Clooney. Well, George Clooney started on one, but I mean, he, you know, Hugh Jackman was fully an A-list movie star and everything. And all
times.
Of a sudden, yeah, he just did a CBS this show that was just horribly ill-conceived.
Role of a lifetime.
It was. That's where you
not
should have.
Not the role of a lifetime. Yeah. All right. So Matt Money Smith,
yes.
Check him out as this thing winds down here. The final week here, get, you know, if you need the crib notes and all that to get caught up to speed, do so with the College Football 24/7 podcast, Mock Draft Weekly, Talent Mock Draft next week.
You're doing that again, right?
Oh, was that a reference to my? Oh, I thought you make Black Tie sent me his. He sent me a 3-line rundown here.
Okay.
I thought that was Matt Money Smith that was doing.
Well, it's
that.
More like 6 lines, but you know.
I thought
no,
the draft
doing,
guys were
I'm
doing.
I'm doing
that.
Draft from here. I'll be
no,
doing.
No,
I'm
doing. Yes, I'm
you're
doing the
part
Mayock.
Of the Talent Mock Draft.
Well, you're
Mayock.
Doing that one.
Yes, the Mayock one. I
thought so. Mayock's not in charge. I thought he was going to try to bounce you.
Oh, I'm sure he would have. But
he said,
by the way, last
he
year's
saw
mock
my name,
draft.
He saw the name Dame Check or whatever he, and was like, I don't remember
Dame
who that
who's
is.
Check.
Who's the funny guy?
Last year's like, mock
who's
draft.
The guy, guys, who's the guy who plays Elaine's dad in Seinfeld?
Oh, Jerry Stiller.
No,
Elaine's dad.
It's the guy from The Thing, and I'll never forget him. And
oh,
he was
he's, no, he's the bad guy in he's the main
Reservoir
guy
Dogs.
In Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, yeah, he's like, you remind me of a tail gunner I met in Korea.
You'll find him alive.
He died.
You know what you have to do? You got to go to the. Is Spencer Gifts still open? Does that store still
oh, yeah.
exist?
I think
they have
so.
One at the Westminster Mall.
If you really want to chap Mayock's ass, you know what you got to do. You got to go to that Spencer Gift and get one of those. You know, you can get the handset phone to plug into your cell phone, and you have to just consummate a trade. I'd love to pick right now, Mayock, but the phone's ringing. Hello, Damashek here. Yep, I've traded out. I'm going down 2 spots. Eisen, you're on the clock. Thanks
Consider,
for the extra second rounder.
Yes. That is officially under consideration now. Yeah, I'm picking for the Buccaneers. They were good enough to give me the Steelers, and then I got the Chiefs and the Broncos to pick for.
Wow.
Don't do this thing where you're like, I'll let you guys
decide.
Are you
ready? Here you go. Off the top of my head, I'm giving you your picks. Here we go. You ready?
I'll tell you what my guess is.
Buccaneers,
Mike Evans.
Mike Evans.
Although I think that Eric Ebron would be an even better one there. But you don't like
Evans is like elite. There's like space there between him and the rest of the wide receiver class.
Okay, 14. My assumption is Darquez Dennard is going to be there, but I feel now like Justin Gilbert might be there, in which case I go Gilbert.
Odell Beckham Jr.
Not, I mean, I'm hearing a lot of noise
I'd
on that one, too.
That's what I would do there, just because I don't
even
think
if either of those corners is available.
If
Gilbert's
Gilbert's
there,
a better fit, but just I think you're best going with Odell Beckham Jr. there. I think that's your best talent. You know, you never draft for need. You always want to go with best player available. That's what most of these teams do.
Odell's, agree. 21, Marquise Lee, or, I mean, you know, they need a pass catcher,
Brandon
obviously,
Cooks.
The Chiefs.
Yeah, I think Brandon Cooks is your
Cooks
pick
will be there.
Yep, I think that's your pick. Superb athlete. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what gets the pat on the back from Mayock, you know, and you want to earn his
that's
approval.
That's what you do.
You want to earn his approval. You want to get the stamp of approval.
It is one of those things, you know, doing it last year, you feel like I'm at
– You're going to be like
– Are you nervous? Nervous? Why would I be nervous to – you know, because Mike Mayock's there. And I thought, what do I care? It's a mock draft. What's he going to do? But you do find yourself – You do say like
you're like
Justin Gilbert looking up at the teacher for approval.
Remember, you know what he's like? He's like Vlade Divac running into Magic Johnson's arms in the 90 finals.
With his hands at his side.
Yeah.
No.
Did I do good? Yeah. Did I do good, Mr.
You know what?
Mayock?
Actually, you know what? Let's scrap that plan. Here's what we
do.
What
buddy.
Fun is that, right? What fun is that? That's what everybody expects. Here's what you do at 7. You take Aaron Donald. I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. And they're going to come at you for it being Pitt, and you're going to say, hey, listen. This is my red star guy. This is my can't miss. It's Lovie Smith. His wide receivers were Marty Booker. And, I mean, Lovie will figure it out. You give him a tool like Aaron Donald, and, oh, imagine the things. Imagine the things in that Tampa, too. He'll get excited.
That's
the play.
You know what was the big disappointment a year ago for me? The big bummer for me was I looked around that room, and Mayock is there, and he's serious, and everybody showed up. You know, Charles Davis has pages upon pages.
I love how Mayock rocks that tight polo shirt, too.
Yes.
Extra media.
I feel like he gets
and
he
folds
sewed.
Up. And he folds it up right
he gets
there.
It you sewed. Little... No, somebody sews it. Somebody takes that.
Then
like,
Eisen and Michael Irvin are backslapping like Hollywood elite, you know, which I suppose they are.
Yeah, Mayock does burpees with Ed Hockley before the thing starts.
And then, you know, I'm in there, and I thought, well, thank goodness Daniel Jeremiah is here. You know, he at least is my control group.
Does bring some levity.
He'll be nice. You know, he's a nice guy. He was the meanest one of them all.
As a snake, huh?
All of a sudden, Daniel Sold Jeremiah, our old pal on Sold the DDFP. Oh, I loves coming in here. But as soon as he got around the fancy pants in the cool click, when he saw it, they have an extra seat at the cool kids' lunch table, I'm kicking Damashek to the curb if it gets me in good with you, Mayock and company. Yep. That's exactly what he
said. Huh?
What a weasel.
And what makes it worse this year is that DJ is now – quite frankly, at the cool kids table all the time. So you don't even have that opportunity to hope that he could be on your side.
No.
Yeah,
no.
There's no...
At least you know where you stand.
No, hey, now this year it's a reckoning. Hey. This time Jeremiah gets
He's like Emilio Estevez
I'm
in
serious
the
about
Breakfast
this.
Club.
You do the Aaron Donald thing at 7.
You
I'm
have
not
to
Better
do
yet,
it.
If you know who...
I'm not kidding.
If you know who Jeremiah wants, it would be the greatest thing.
He loves
eight,
Donald. Loves him. I'm not kidding. It's like his favorite player in the draft.
If he has picks, since I have 7, 14, 21, and 28, if he could have the pick immediately behind each of those, I would delight if you could tweet me whoever he's going to take.
Okay. Take him every time.
Take every single guy he wants.
I can do that.
That would delight me. All right. I have been delighted by this podcast. I hope all of you listening have as well. Again, College Football 24/7. Matt Money Smith and Petros Papadakis, the great show on AM 570 in Los Angeles and available on iHeartRadio, the iHeartRadio app, yes?
Yeah.
I know that off the top of my head because I legitimately listen to it in my automobile when I drive home each day.
Don't worry about yesterday.
Yeah, we didn't get into his impressions of
today.
It's your old colleagues that are the best.
He does the Joel Myers, and it's just so great.
Yeah, you want to play the role of Chris Webber real quick? We're going to call the Spurs-Mavericks game last night. All right, real quick. Tim Duncan gets the ball, the low block, goes up, scores. And nice bit of basketball there by Tim Duncan, puts the Spurs up by 2.
Impressive move there.
Yeah, whatever, Chris. Let's talk about the Spurs and what I would have done on that play. I would have had Tony Parker crash the paint, actually, sucked in the defense, and then kicked it out for a 3 from Manu Ginobili. That's just me.
They got to make a couple.
You know what
of...
I would do if I were the Mavericks on this possession? I would get the ball to Dirk on the wing and have him shoot the 3.
But Dirk was
What a great timeout right there by Rick Carlisle. would have done it exactly the same way myself.
Rick Carlisle.
The great thing about Rick and Pop, Pop gets all the credit, you know, but Rick really is one of the great thinkers in the game today.
Well, Popovich did
one thing that I'd like to see more of.
I like when he gets into the
poor
line.
Chris Webber never gets a word in.
And then he veers into, at least according to Matt Money Smith's impression, he veers into wine analysis all the time.
Let me tell you something, Chris. I just had a delicious Bordeaux last night, a glass of it. I would share a bit of it with you, but your palate isn't nearly refined enough, so I will instead drink it all myself.
Well, I had a nice port at the...
Shut up, Chris. Nobody wants to hear what you have to say. It's my show. I'm back on the national stage, baby.
All right. Excellent stuff. Matt Money Smith and Bucky Brooks
Shake it out, Adam Rank.
We'll be out in Manhattan for all sorts of good times. Keep the both of yous? Yep.
The threes of yous?
NFL.com.
Black Tie going too?
NFL Network, this, that, and the other. NFL Media is your source for all the draft coverage coming up next week.
Make sure you are
looking for us. Yeah, Money's going to be holding down the fort here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, actually, you know what? I'm doing it with Matt Millen. I'm looking forward to that.
I'll be in MSG on Monday night.
Look
watching,
at you.
The Penguins defeat the Blue Shirts if Lemieux is willing. All right, so listen, we'll talk to you next week. Meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.